Nick Tamara with you for the Sunday Lone Star Players podcast. We've been going at it every Sunday now for the last few weeks, going to keep it going. I have a new special guest with me today, and what better could happen than have Dallas area's finest CJ Johnson to join me to talk about Lone Star's late pick five. CJ, what's going on, man?
Nothing much, Nick. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's been a wet weather week down here. I think you've had a little bit of the same problems up in the DFW area, and we'll have to worry about that a little bit, I guess, as far as the sequence goes.
Yeah, it's literally, I think, been raining off and on here for the last 2 or 3 weeks. They came off the turf in the last race last night. It's drizzling here now, but I just talked to someone at the track, and they said it's been pouring all morning, so I'm going to go ahead and handicap this, you know, off the turf. I know there's only one turf race in the late pick five sequence, but I don't see there being a chance that they stay on tonight.
Yeah, unfortunately, we play the game outdoors, so this is something that we deal with. And that 2:35 first post, of course, there's a little bit of a chance of drying out if the weather leaves the area, but I think there's actually a forecast for rain, at least to some extent, over the next couple of days. So I think we'll be dealing with a wet main track and certainly off the turf. So let's not waste any time. Let's get right into the sequence. It begins with race number 6, which is at 4:55 Central Time. That's going to be 5:55 Eastern Time. And if you're in any of the other time zones, you can do the math. 5.5 furlongs for $5,000 beaten claimers. This looked to me like a race, CJ, where you were going to see two of the main players in the training ranks at Lone Star square off with West Fest and Boston Repo. Was there anybody else that you felt like could potentially get in the mix?
You know, I really don't. I think Boston Repo is definitely the one to beat here. Now, the three could you see that last buyer on the grass? Now, you know, he's been running shorter. I don't know. He seems like there's lots of pace scenarios here. You know, I think the 6 is going to go, but that looks like kind of cheap speed. You know, and if the track is playing, you know, if it's going to be really tough to close, 3 could, but I mean, Boston Repo is kind of my lone A. I'm probably just going to start off by singling him. But if you want to get creative, you could kind of go with the 3 and try and find a price.
Yeah, you know, I thought Tale of a Storm was dangerous too with that speed, obviously going turf to dirt. Different people feel different ways about this angle. I've generally liked it, especially in a situation where you're dealing with a dirt horse, one that maybe was just tried on turf for lack of a spot to run in on dirt or maybe something along those lines. Of course, the stamina issue that it seems like Tale of a Storm has could be a bit of a problem. Boston Repo figures to kind of grab the baton, so to speak, when Tale of a Storm will ultimately capitulate, which I think is something you can generally expect. West Fest is going to probably go off the favorite in here, dropping in class from Oaklawn, where he ran in a starter allowance event last time out. Didn't have the cleanest of trips, but you know, the problem is this horse just doesn't have a lot of very good running lines. And yeah, and he's clearly been ouchy, and he's had a lot of time away. And you know, you're basing using this horse on things that may have happened 3 or 4 years ago, which is always could end up being kind of a fool's errand.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is, you know, I think you're right. He probably will go off favored. He's obviously not the same horse he was. You know, you look at that that lifetime best buyer on a wet track, the 87, but, you know, that was a while back. And with these, you know, Lone Star Park pick fours and pick fives, if you can, you know, I know we're going to kind of go with Broberg here, but generally if you can beat 2 or 3 Broberg Asmussen favorites, it'll pay okay. You know, and I don't think Boston Repo is going to go off as the favorite, like you said. West Fest probably will. And I mean, that's one favorite down, you know, if you can get past him. I know it's not going to be, you know, a big price, but still you're beating a favorite that probably other people are going to single.
No, you're absolutely right. I actually was looking through West Fest lifetime PPs because when you mentioned the 87 buyer on a wet track, I was reasonably sure it was when I saw him at Keeneland finish a good second in a claimer in April of 2017. And that was actually an 80. He got an 87 a couple of starts later at Oaklawn, which of course in typical West Fest fashion was 10 months later. So yeah, that's generally been the kind of pattern in his running. Sure. Line. So I think definitely a race where you'll want to have a potentially create a little bit of value by beating Westfest. That brings us on to the seventh. And if you're listening, we're going to go over our A's and backups at the end of the podcast so that you have everything. And that'll be in the show notes as well. The seventh race is a maiden special weight event at 7 furlongs. And, you know, we were talking a little bit offline before we got started about the difference in Texas racing that we've certainly enjoyed being a couple of Texans in the caliber of horses that are running in Texas on a regular basis. I think this is a good example. The Wanna Real Jewel is a Cortland Farm homebred, but still this is the kind of horse that, you know, 3 or 4 years ago probably would have been sent to Churchill or somewhere where Steve Asmussen has a string and for bigger purse money and maybe better opportunities. But nowadays we see these horses stay in Texas and it's very, very nice to be enjoying this. I think that between Captain Beyond and A Real Jewel, Asmussen is going to have the two favorites. And do you think we can beat him?
You know, again, I love trying to beat him, but I don't think so. I think some other ones to, you know, obviously A Real Jewel is going to be my A here and, you know, ran very respectable at Oaklawn. And you know, those maiden specials are no joke, up there. But you know, the only other thing I see is, well, let me go back. You know, if we're running on a sloppy or muddy track, you know, the Nyquist can't go wrong there. But the, Calhoun runner here, I think Real Jewel's going to sit just off him, but if he can, you know, get out and relax, but again, I don't think he'll be able to carry that speed 7 furlongs. So yeah, I think Real Jewel's the one to beat. And I just, you know, it's tough when cause Captain Beyond's going to go off, you know, short price as well. I do like the improvement on the 5 Reliant, you know, ran decent in the slop last time, going 6 was coming late, you know, closing. So if, you know, the 1 and the 4 were to hook up, possibly the 5, you know, Greg Green's been firing here at 20%. I know it's only out of 10 starts, but you know, he's in the money on 4 of those. So that's probably one of my B's is the 5. 6, obviously a big improvement from the last time out. Now he's cutting back. I don't know if this distance is his best. You know, it's kind of tough to tell from those running lines. But also, you know, I trust Steve's placement in horses. I mean, he's one of the best horsemen I've ever met in my life. So that's one of those things where something might not make sense on the PPs to you, but you kind of just have to trust them. But yeah, I think this race goes through the 1, and then I'll have a couple backups with the 5 and 6 as well. But that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, conventional wisdom always was that when a horse like Captain Beyond debuted at a mile and then was kept at a mile and a 16th, it's because they're probably pretty slow. And maybe just need distance to mitigate the difference respectively between them and their peers. And now, of course, you're dealing with a third time starter cutting back in distance. So it's like, well, I mean, do you think she's slow, or do you think that this might be a situation where the extra stamina that's been put into her in those two turn efforts could potentially make her a big threat in the stretch? And there should be at least a decent enough pace with Fantastic Riva and A Real Jewel and potentially one of Texas Tidelands or Flew By You, who showed speed going a mile last time. That obviously doesn't perfectly translate to speed going 7/8, but you would think that one of them will be forwardly placed, perhaps Texas Tidelands, in an effort to protect that inside position. But right, I felt like A Real Jewel was clearly the one to beat, a gradually improving horse, and you know, got buried down a little bit inside a couple of times at Fairgrounds and ran an improved race when chasing on the outside. This is the kind of horse that I could see Stuart Elliott getting aggressive with at the start and trying to establish command. And one of the things that has made Stuart do so well with Asmussen is that he's aggressive. And it's unbelievable how many races he has won to me. I was at Sam Houston when he came down and rode a couple of races on a Tuesday afternoon in March of 2020. Before COVID. And, and I thought to myself, wow, I mean, if he moved his tack to Texas, to the Retom or to the Remington Lone Star Sam Houston circuit, he'd win at quite a number. And that's exactly what happened. And so we've seen that continue. Stuart Elliott probably didn't think 5 years ago he would ever be riding anywhere where he'd be hitting at a 23% clip and making real money. So that's good for him. Yeah. And it's nice to see an old veteran getting the job done.
No, 100%. And you know, whenever now Stewart is Steve's go-to guy. So, you know, that's his first call, no matter what. So obviously there's a bit of a preference there with the one. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if the six ran, you know, improved. I can't play him at those odds.
Right. I agree. You're going to have to take an underlaid price. No question about it. That moves us to the eighth, which of course we're anticipating at the time we're taping this is going to be taken off the turf. It would be run at a mile on the main track. And, you know, this is one of those situations where as a handicapper, you kind of enjoy it when it happens. This might be a simpler race off the turf. Look to me as if Good Fight, based on that win two back on a muddy track here at Lone Star. I mean, if she runs back to that, they're all in it for the minor placings.
Yeah, this was kind of an easy one to me. Single Good Fight and kind of move on. You know, you're going to – looks like we'll probably end up with a well, it was kind of already a short field, you know, from the get-go. And I mean, maybe four horses will stay in. You know, I think the three probably scratches out, right? The Whoppy. The six ran in an off track last time, didn't run well. So you would think that Bravo would scratch her. The Karen Jacks horse probably will scratch as well, the five. So, I mean, we could end up with three horses here. And yeah, I don't see anyone beating Good Fight. That's just you're going to have to single him and hope for the best.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I thought the three and five at the very least would come out, and I don't know if there might be some arm twisting going on with Frosty Flirt or any of the other two that we're anticipating could come out to stay in just to give the race a little bit more field size. But Good Fight was a horse that coming into that off the turf race two back had tried the dirt twice and ran a decent second earlier in her career, had a fourth showing on the running lines, the most recent ones at Remington, and earned a buyer figure that day that would generally make her competitive with this kind of group off the turf. And she actually improved by leaps and bounds. So maybe it was the wet surface. Broberg playing a little bit of poker there, putting her in for the tag, which I'm not sure anybody's really looking for a conditionless $25,000 filly. But sure. This is something that Broberg obviously is very, very good at. He, of course, also has Quinn Murphy, so he could end up running both and giving Good Fight a bit of a target with Quinn Murphy. We will see what decision is made there. But again, anticipating off the turf and a generally pretty small field. Moving on to the ninth, the one other than at six furlongs. Really good race, CJ. Where did you land here?
Yeah, so I kind of thought that, I mean, obviously this race is going to go through the 5 gallant plunger. If we get, you know, let's say the two, I think the two is going to go to the lead. Now, I watched that last race where Optimal won and the two went out and, you know, actually didn't, you know, kind of didn't fade as, I know it says, you know, she ended up fifth, but it wasn't that bad. You know, it wasn't as bad as it looks on paper. Now, if he, you know, has a little more, you know, fitness in him after that race, gets an easy lead, you know, he could wire. That's kind of a B for me. The one obviously came on after stalking newscaster and, you know, ran well. So that's kind of another B for me. And then the six actually wasn't, I mean, tried him on the turf last time, just toss that race, put a line through it, right? But that same, you know, race, that Optimal one, Bibleman ran second. The six came on pretty nice. And, you know, they're adding the blinkers. I think if he's maybe a little closer to the pace in this one, you know, that could be an upset horse. That'll be a B again for me. But, you know, again, Gallant Plunger just looks too tough. But this horse has never run at Lone Star. I see it's won two out of its four starts in the slop. It's by Candy Ride, Dynaformer, you know, on the dam side. It obviously loves the mud. Sometimes these horses, and I've had it happen, you know, they might be standouts at Oak. I mean, they might be running well at Oaklawn, and they come here and it just doesn't translate sometimes. You know, so that's kind of one of those that you can maybe try and beat. I don't see it happening, though. But I'm going to, you know, this is a race. It's not like the last race where I'm only using the four and that's it. You know, I'm going to use Gallant Plunger, but I'm also going to take some shots with some kind of B horses.
Yeah, I think you have to give yourself some other options. Obviously, Gallon Plunger, if he runs back to the effort two back, will be impossible to beat. I think the difference between the April 10th outing and the April 30th effort is that Santana kept him a little bit more in the game. And I think that's going to be the key, because losing a lot of ground at six furlongs is going to be difficult. Now, I will say that from a pace figure perspective, this horse has been in two slow-paced races in a row. And I don't know that this is necessarily going to be much different, but Newscaster is a real speed horse. And as you sort of alluded to, this horse has improved significantly since getting into Cary Craddock's barn. And I thought the effort last time was actually very good. I'm a big believer in the Timeform US pace figures. And you would notice that that race was, the running line is coated in red, which shows that the pace was fast. And I thought he stayed on well, all things considered. And you know, now the rail, unfortunately, I think forces Richard Aramia's hand a little bit, and they're going to have to go. But in a way, that's kind of the best circumstance. I think what will really be very telling in terms of how this race unfolds is which horse Broberg runs in the entry. If he ends up scratching one, which I don't know if he's obligated to, having named Relu on both, but if he ends up scratching one of them, and if it's Bibleman, that's obviously going to work very well in Newscaster's favor. Yeah. So,
yeah. You know, let me say something real quick. Sorry to interrupt about Newscaster. That I don't know that running line. You know, he broke. I feel like it was more than a half step. You know, or I mean, a half length. I don't know. He broke a little slow, and he kind of had to get rushed up to get up in there. So if he can break well, you know what I'm saying. That
right
gets him to relax a little bit. He doesn't have to use so much horse early on, and yeah. If he gets an easy lead, he could walk.
Yeah, that's a great point, and makes him definitely an interesting participant. You talked a little bit about Declined, who ran two respectable races after being claimed from Mike Maker. I think Mike Maker might be one of the three or four toughest trainers in the game to claim from.
Yep.
But then last time out, you know, you kind of saw a step backwards on the turf. This is a horse that had previously run at least okay on the turf, so I wonder if Declined if that might be how to describe his form coming into here. I would be a little bit nervous about that, but I could see definitely using him as a backup given the performance two starts back. But yes, it'll be difficult to beat Gallon Plunger. One other horse I was going to mention, just you know, two guys that follow Texas racing. How about J.R. Caldwell in 2021? I mean, Electoral took a big step forward last time, moving turf to dirt. He and Leandro Goncalves are winning left and right.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes you see. I can tell you, I mean, we've been beat by J.R. Caldwell horses that are stepping up into allowances from claimers. And you're like, what is he doing? Well, he knows what he's doing. You know, that obviously this horse can run in an off, on an off track. That race was pretty impressive. And you know, Cary Craddock gets Gonsalves to ride for her a lot. Now, I know Aramia rode Newscaster last race, but you know, Gonsalves and Caldwell have kind of really hooked up to, what are they at? Oh, they're at 27% right now together. So that's pretty impressive. Yeah, no, you're right. This, I don't think Electoral can be, you know, it's like we were saying, we're going to go through Gallon Plunger, but then, you know, probably have a B ticket spreading a little bit. And yeah, you can't dismiss this horse, obviously.
Seems like the right kind of approach to what could be a trickier race than it looks on paper. That takes us to a nightcap, Rock Bottom Maiden Claimers at 7/8. And there are going to be a couple of class droppers, or obviously a lot of class droppers from top to bottom in the field. But I think a couple of them will dominate the market. And that's number 4, Mine Redemption, who's 9-5 on the morning line and could potentially drift down off of that. I would say the other one, at least in my opinion, is Fearless Factor on the far outside. And did you see one of those two, or maybe some additional options?
Yeah, I'm going to try here and beat Mine Redemption. Obviously dropping, very capable horse, could beat me, but you know, Fearless Factor is my A for sure. Kevin Scholl's a very, very good trainer. He was a former Danny Pish assistant. Since he's kind of gone out on his own, you know, he's done very well. He's a great horseman though. You know, you're adding, you know, a very, very capable jockey here with Lane. So I'm just going to try and, you know, not single the chalk here for once. but yeah, I think this, Fearless Factor is my A. And then obviously anything can happen with some of these other horses, but that's kind of my top pick right now.
Yeah, there were other options, I guess. Fancy Blaze is dropping, dropping in class, but $20,000 Arkansas bred maiden claimers to $7,500 open at Lone Star. I'm not certain I want to necessarily call that a drop. With that said, she did improve most recently, didn't get out of the gate well, did make a strong late move. But this is a horse I think that you'd probably want to include maybe as a backup. I also felt like there was a little bit of a case to be made for Star in the Sky, who's now second off the layoff. I guess if you like Star in the Sky, you should at least consider Scarlett O'Hanna. Each of them are relatively slow on speed figures in comparison to some of the major players in here, like Mine Redemption and Fearless Factor, but it at least did offer you some options in terms of other ways to go. Mine Redemption is a horse that looks like she is a bit of a refuser and seems to try and find a way to lose on multiple occasions when she really has no reason to. But as evidenced by that loss two back when she was basically home and cooled out at the eighth pole and ended up getting caught. But she's the inside speed and she'll be relatively tough to beat, I would imagine. I will I'll use she and Fearless Factor and maybe some long shots as backups.
Okay. Yeah, I think really those are the main two. Again, though, sometimes these bottom claimers will shock you and something will come out of nowhere on you that you just, you didn't see at first. But I really don't see much in here other than, Mine Redemption and Fearless Factor. And like you said, the 12 intrigues me a little bit, but nothing that's really exciting me. And then you got Caldwell again with the 10, like you mentioned, might enjoy this wet track. We'll see. And then, that's kind of where I see it. These races are tough. I mean, bottom claimers are always tough with minimal kind of past performances to go off of,
Yeah, no question about it. But certainly a competitive race to end the sequence, especially if you have a negative opinion on Mine Redemption, which I think is something that's relatively easy to have. And that wraps it up for us. So we'll go through the sequence now, race by race, and just give you what would be our A horses and backups. In the first leg, CJ, what do you have number-wise?
I had the 1 as an A and the 3 as a B. And I'm going to – I'm sorry, the 3-4 as Bs. I know I shouldn't be having the 4 as a B, but, I'm probably going to hammer a $2 A-only ticket. And
right.
Probably run some Bs, but 3-4 are my Bs.
And I have the 1 and 4 as As and the 3 as a B. In race number 7, I have the 1 as a lone A and the 4, 5, and 6 as backups. Where were you in race 7?
Exactly where I was. 1 with the A and then 4, 5, 6 Bs.
Right. Moving on to race 8, I think we're both going to lone A the 4, not try and complicate what looks like a relatively simple race.
Yep.
In race number 9, I'm going to use the 2 and 5 as A's and the 1, 3, 4, and 6 as backups. Where did you land in race 9?
Yeah, at first I wrote down just 5 as an A, but I think I'm with you there on kind of all in it. But I'm going to go 4, 5 as my A's and then 1, 2, 6 as my B's.
And 1, 2, 6. And then that takes us to the nightcap where I'm going to be kind of a simpleton and use the 4 and 13 and use the 2 and 9 as backups.
Yeah, I'm going to key on the 13 here and then go as B's 2, 4, and 9. So I think we're all kind of on the same horses. It's just kind of, putting them together and A's and B's is where we're different.
Right, getting them on the same ticket, definitely the key, and that's what we're going to try and do. Hopefully we've at least made it a little bit easier for everybody with our rundown of the sequence. And CJ, I thank you so much for joining me. We're definitely going to have to do this again before the meet's said and done.
Yeah, absolutely. And real quick, I just wanted to mention, for people that aren't very familiar with Lone Star, like I said, if you can beat a couple of these big price horses in these legs, this thing can pay okay. My buddy George Bryant scooped the pool last night with a $28 horse as the highest one. And then, the rest were all really logical. And then they took the last race off the grass and he was live to, three horses, and so they gave him all, and he scooped it. But yeah, like I said, if you can just, you know, beat a couple of Brobergs and Asmussens in these sequences, you know, it can pay pretty good.
No question about it. Definitely worth giving a look, both because of the low takeout. Obviously, the players pick five, takeout 12% at Lone Star. You do get the 4 or 5 consolation as well, which I think keeps you in action. I think there's definitely some benefit to it. Of course, when you hit, you say to yourself, boy, I wish they didn't take part of my pool and yeah, play the 4 or 5s. But absolutely. There's also, I think in all likelihood, everybody is going to end up on more 4 or 5 tickets than 5 of 5. But sure. Yeah, great point about it. And so they'll get started at 2:35 today. Again, this sequence gets going at 5:55 Eastern time, 4:55 Central time. CJ, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
Twitter is at CJ Johnson, but it's spelled out CEEJAYJOHNSEN. And, I think a lot of people are coming to town for Memorial Day, the big, Sexton Mile Day, the Lone Star Million Day. So, you know, hit me up and let me know if you're going to be there. I know you're going to be there, Nick. So look forward to kind of seeing some new faces out there, and I'm out there quite a bit. So, you know, if anyone's ever out there, let me know and we'll come by and say hi.
Yeah, very much looking forward to it. It will actually be the 22nd anniversary of the first Lone Star Million, which was on May 31st, 1999. I remember it very fondly. It was the day that my dad and I played the pick 7, and we hit 5, and he told me as they ran the last race, he said, this thing is going to pay on 5. And I said, you're completely out of your mind. And it paid on 5. So he was right about that and paid on 5. And I think we ended up getting, I don't know, $3,000-$4,000 for the 5 out of 7. I thought we were rich.
That is a great memory to have.
One of the earliest memories, and I'm glad to see big racing and big names. I was looking at the nomination list last night for the stakes races. They closed yesterday, and you know, there's obviously some big barns and big names on there, and it's great to see Texas racing with any kind of prominence again.
Yeah, it sounds like Nick's Go is going to come, and by my standards, so should be an interesting race.
Yeah, definitely. CZ Rocket, I've also heard, is a possibility to go the mile. Yeah. Which, it should be a lot of fun. Going to be a great day. Fingers crossed for some good weather. So definitely take a gander at CJ's Twitter if you want to see, or if you want to share anything with him about Dallas sports. You'll always have a willing participant there. I will certainly note that there's been a lot of jocularity in that topic between he and yep. I. It always happens between Houstonians and Dallasites, and that will continue undoubtedly. Well, but hey, your Mavs are back in the playoffs. You said 2020.
I was just about to say, yeah, we got back in the playoffs last year. We did get the series win, but I actually had a little wager on them yesterday to win straight up against the Clippers. So I was up on the day there. So
there you go. Yeah, a lot to be said for that. Don't ask me when the Rockets are going to be back in the playoffs, because I think our kids might be done with college by then.
Hey, and so. I think the Strohs and the Rangers played the last two nights too. But
they did. Yes, if the Rangers just win 2 more games, they'll match the series result from last week. So, but yeah, so a little bullpen issue the last couple of nights, but we'll have to hope for stretched out starter today. But anyway, CJ, thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. And thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks, of course, to one of our platinum sponsors. I guess I'll assign a color or letter grade to them in platinum in Lone Star Park. It's been very supportive of the network. And I'll be back with you next week to go over some weekend action at Lone Star. Pete will definitely have some specific content dealing with the Memorial Day program, the Lone Star Million, 5 stakes races. That card is going to get started at 2:35. Hopefully it's going to end at about 7 o'clock or so, because I have an 8:40 flight home. So looking forward to being up there for that. And thanks again to everybody for joining me. Special thanks to CJ Johnson joining me today. Best of luck with this sequence and in the future.
Thanks for having me, Nick.
Thank you, CJ. Take care.